Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is your truck and auto accessory source. Floor liners protect your vehicle from spills and the elements. Quality lighters from WeatherTech and Husky are a perfect fit. Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, your one-stop accessory and protection shop.
Mr. X, he rejoins the program, community activist, and X and I talk a lot about things, and we go over the news, and what X has been in his service to humanity, I guess, Ed, is what you do, is that you keep bringing up, by the way, welcome, you got your coffee in you, you're ready to talk then, you're fine, right?
I'm just finished preparing another cup, Bill.
Okay, good, glad to hear that. Yeah, I took a little sleeping pill last night, so I'm a little bit of a groggy, so I could use a little more coffee, too, and I'm going to keep going at that. That being said, though, we're keeping an eye on the actual government statistics, the actual laws that are affecting us, and the fight is always to try to hold people accountable to what they do and actually make them follow the law. And I had mentioned a response that I had sent to Commissioner Rick Dyer yesterday because he was concerned about thinking I was kind of dividing people and words to the effect. And I read it. And like I said, and maybe I was too personal in some of my criticisms of the board's decision last week to vote 2-1 against sending a letter notifying Governor Brown that Jackson County is, in fact, responding to the emergency effectively and that we don't need to be in the emergency orders. And I looked at it as a lost opportunity. And I looked at it as a lost opportunity to engage the governor and try to reduce the load on we the people here. It's kind of how I presented it here, Mr. X. And you've been keeping an eye on the COVID-19 numbers, too, and how it's being reported. And what has concerned me is that, say what you will, it has been less of a health emergency in Southern Oregon than it has been an economic emergency. But this has been a self-induced, shooting of the economy in the head by the governor and various policies. And that's kind of how I see it. So I think it's important that we be very careful and look at these numbers and try to tease more truth out of it than we may be otherwise told by folks with agendas. Would that be fair to say this morning?
That would be absolutely, Bill. I don't have to say another word. You've actually summed it up totally.
Okay.
I'm going to finish my coffee and go back to sleep.
Oh, don't do that. Not yet.
to sum it up, Bill, actions, people's character is defined by actions, not words, okay? Now, our governor, there's not the consideration that she has for the rural or the different parts of the state as opposed to the liberal strongholds have been very clear in her reaction in Portland. Now, you have to sit back, and my worry is, okay, what would be the long-term effect of if we had some type of group come in and do a violent uprising here like they've done in Portland?
Okay, so Antifa or some other kind of mob comes over and tries to do a lot of damage. Okay, yeah.
Let's say they start down by the federal courthouse, and Governor Brown argues that we shouldn't have federal police protecting the government properties, and we shouldn't this, and we shouldn't that, and she's... Why would she, the question that comes out of it is, why would she exist in an area of life that supports anarchy and the destruction of our way of life? Okay. Well, I've talked for a long time, and I've told people that the papers of the policy direction of the state of Oregon are there for the public to read. So all of this stuff is out there for people to read and understand. But basically, there's an environmental left that wants a complete revision of our society into a sustainable world. They've aligned themselves with the United Nations under sustainable development.
And they're not hiding this, by the way. This is out in the open, no. And it is official state policy.
That's right. And so I look at everything and how it relates to what, because I figured a long time ago that if I knew where they were going, I would know what steps they would take along the way. Well, like right now, you look at it. Well, what do we do with a Supreme Court decision that sided with the governor out of the churches suing, the governor's proclamation saying, and they won, And then it went to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, well, we side with the governor. She had the authority under the statute. Well, instead of arguing with the Supreme Court, let's look at the reality of what it gave us. It gave us that she had the authority under that law. Well, it wasn't part of that law. It was that law in whole. And the reality is that Section 5 on that says very clearly that the geographic area must be stated in the proclamation. And then it goes on saying that such area shall be no larger than necessary as to effectively respond to the emergency.
All right. And shall means that you have to do it. She has no choice. And she included the entire state of Oregon in her emergencies and executive orders. So one could reasonably claim that if you are responding effectively, then you don't need to be within this. And I would also say that does the governor have the right constitutionally to determine that? Because it says shall. So shall would appear to be this is a check on the governor's authority to do what she does. So there has to be a limitation on this.
Right. Well, what the Supreme Court gave us was that double-edged sword. They gave her also. It's a double-edged sword. So the reality comes down to it's a thing of what is the definition of respond effectively?
Mm-hmm.
Because then it becomes just a function of law. She has no choice because the Supreme Court said she had the authority under that law, but that means the limitations of that law and understanding effective response. And I talked the other day and I said it, everything is based upon fear and fear comes from ignorance. If we don't study and understand the actualities and try to place a definition of responding effectively into this and look at how they're manipulating numbers through the Oregon Health Authority. So all of these things combined, you look at, well, the general direction that she doesn't care if the economy goes down.
And you see, that's the point. And this is where people, I think, forget when we say, hey, let's hold the governor accountable to the entire law, right? This is, you know, just say, hey, the whole law, because it is well known. You can see by Governor Brown's actions that she doesn't really care about the economic health of Southern Oregon. Otherwise, I don't think that she would be having imposed some of the emergency orders that she has done. We also know that she doesn't really care about peace and security in the state of Oregon. Look at how she has stood by for more than 60 days as a feckless mayor, essentially destroyed a section of downtown Portland or allowed the destruction of it. And it's like, hey, nothing to see. Move along here. It's, somehow a First Amendment right to try to burn down the federal courthouse, right? I mean, that. So you have to understand, you know, you're not dealing with an honest broker here and someone who is really looking out for the peace and security of Southern Oregonians, Ed.
Well, that's exactly right. But where does that logically take us? What is the analysis of the direction? Well, the direction can only be what the official state policy is. It's the implementation of rules and law from outside of this country under sustainable development. So the phoenix rising from the ashes is this new society that's based upon clean energy and the heck with the other thing because we have to stop it right now. And this is 2020. This was the year. This was the year that it was all supposed to happen, but magically it was derailed a little bit. Now she's trying to put the train back on the track.
So in some ways, one could make the case then that Governor Brown, with the official state policy of sustainable development, essentially eco-communism, you know, that's really what we're talking about, is saying, okay, we're behind on sustainable development. Oh, we have a virus. Oh, my goodness. It hasn't killed many people, really, in the grand scheme of things. Oh, but we have the virus, and hence we can destroy the economy and then, and this is a conspiracy theory Thursday thing I'm just going to kind of throw out there. Through my executive orders, I can crush real economic activity and eventually have people begging for the sustainable development and the clean energy jobs and the carbon taxes and all the rest of it. And I think you make a pretty good case for that, Mr. X.
Well, for me, it's just a logical progression because it's a stated goal. It's the stated goal of the official state policy. So when I look at this, there's been a group of people that have been after this, and they've hit it, and they use this consensus process that we've talked about so many times to create a pathway into this. But The reality of it is, Bill, is that there is still the rule of law. If we, being the governed, and they rule by consent of the governed in this country, and we're still part of this country, that this is where the misunderstanding. Now, I give great kudos to our county commission over the past few years. I have a problem with their lack of support into this because it was not inviting a court battle. It wasn't doing anything. It was just informing the other side that, hey, statistically, we're at a point where we are not subject to your executive order because we have effectively responded. Here's the numbers. We've reviewed the data.
And we have a county health department. And the other part about this is that there is no real state health department when it comes right down to it, because all the health issues and directives are really taken care of on a county-by-county basis, are they not?
That's exactly right. And this is what the average person forgets, is that the entire system of government of this country, and I say of the country, not only the state, was reliant upon a county-by-county interaction to ascertain the effects. And the effects here is the harm. Now, government cannot do harm without compensating you, okay? So when you look at this, is the effect of this order a harm?
I would say absolutely. It's been a huge harm here in Southern Oregon. You have about 25-30% of all small businesses that have been shut down. And the vast majority of those, I was reading an article in Forbes the other day, say they're not going to reopen. And so these are massive destructions of wealth. And I believe it dovetails quite nicely into Governor Brown's agenda-based program to bring in sustainable development, because you crush us enough, we'll be begging for the clean energy jobs. And, of course, we'll be lowering our standards of living along that pathway, too.
Right. Well, the question comes down to, how are you going to pay that mortgage? How are you going to pay for things? How are you going to eat? Now, you look at the possible supply chain issues that are coming up. Mm-hmm. You look at all of this. Well, how does anybody, unless they're willing to sacrifice to achieve something, how do they allow it to go on? Well, that's what the laws are there for. So I look at it as there was, I think you phrased it, as an opportunity, you know, that was missed by doing this. Someone convinced them that there would be a huge court battle, or there would be, you know, oh, the Supreme Court decided. Well, if you read the Supreme Court decision, you read it, Bill.
I've read the Supreme Court decision. It was a very simple decision, really. At the heart of it is that it validated the law that Governor Brown used to declare the emergency. But that also means the entire law is validated, not just the fact that she can declare an emergency. That's all.
So thus I look at it and I just say, look, the reality to this whole thing is that the Supreme Court gave us a double-edged sword. We can look at it and move to our protection, okay? But we have to do that through our counties. And now when I look at the counties, which you asked me to do today, because I sent this to you earlier, the realities are really interesting, because this is off the Jackson County Health and Human Services website, the COVID-19 update. As of July 29th, we have 85 active infectious cases. Now, I'll let everybody do the math. We have 225,000 people, I think, basically, is the figure mostly used in Jackson County, people here. And we have a grand total right now of 85 active cases. So what kind of percentage of the population is that, Bill?
Tiny.
That's what I'm saying. Now, you look at it and you say, well, what has been the progression? Well, it's interesting, because the progression goes back in July 19th, there was 81 active cases. The 21st of July, it was 78 active cases. The 20th, 82. The 22nd, 88. The 23rd, 96. 24th, 88. The 25th, 94. The 26th, 109. The 27th, 120. The 28th, 130. And magically, on the 29th, it's down to 85 again.
So we lost, what, about 50 active cases immediately, overnight?
Yeah, that's right.
Huh. How does that happen?
Well, let's analyze the threat. The threat is not COVID-19. The threat is SARS-CoV-2. That's the actual viral. causative agent that they have to, that no one is paying attention to. Okay. Now, through HIPAA and through all of the little rules and laws, there's a lack of information. Oh, we had our first Jackson County death. Well, the guy was up in Portland at the Portland Medical Center. Okay. Now, where did he get, they won't release the information. Where did he contract COVID-19, as they say? COVID-19 death. Well, that's a list of symptoms. You can say, oh, he had verified, but no one has said he had verified SARS-CoV-2. They said he died of COVID-19. And I firmly, since the beginning of this, look at this, and according to the CDC, according to all the things that I can read as a citizen of this country, as a general person, all the things that I can read indicate that this definition, okay, the causative agent is SARS-CoV-2. That's the causative agent.
That's the actual virus.
Mm-hmm. That's what this was all done. COVID-19 is a list of symptoms that indicate you can have this. Some of the symptoms are shared with other viral things.
Now, they even say that. It even says it on the Jackson County site, by the way, and you also see this on Josephine County. I mean, and we're all dealing with the same sort of situation under the CDC. So let me just say here, Ed, what you're telling me then is that when people talk about COVID-19 symptoms or COVID-19, my father died of Parkinson's a number of years ago. Remember, I told you about that.
Right.
But really, what he died of was pneumonia.
That's
now,
right.
So essentially what you're saying is if my father was in Jackson County right now and had died of pneumonia, he would likely be counted as COVID-19 because he had the same symptoms, right?
No, the hospitals have a financial reward, basically, and they need that reward. I'm not criticizing it, but when they tag a death and they tag it as COVID-19, there's a standard amount of money that they get, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I look at this, and so they're not going to differentiate. Well, he died of pneumonia, so we'll list him as a COVID-19. They don't allow autopsy. They don't do anything else. But the reality is what we have to do as citizens is start demanding the actual statistics based upon the causative agent that was the threat. And I look at this, and what we're doing is allowing an intrusion into our system for the means of moving an agenda forward when reality-based understandings are going to the wayside.
So, Mr. X, I only got about a minute or so left here. It's really up to our counties, Jackson, Josephine, Coos, Curry. It really is up to them. And the letter that they all agreed to sign on, in my opinion, did nothing. It did really nothing to further or try to nip the agenda in the bud. Would that be fair, or am I being unfair?
The letter that they didn't sign on is the most important thing, Bill. And I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with what you just said. But the letter that they didn't sign on, as I heard it in the meeting, I listened to the meeting and I heard the letter, I heard everything. And so did the governor, by the way, because the next day the governor said she was looking at working with individual counties. Why? Because she would most likely have had to, because the law is very specific. But the realities to it are, as we look at this, do I believe we have an emergency? Well, I believe that there should be a health advisory. That's my own personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
That we can function under that, and then we have a duty to our friends, our relatives, our families, to protect ourselves and them. We need to be prudent, okay? We don't need to destroy our economic health and vitality and totally in order to beat the virus. We have to beat COVID-19. Because if you say you're beating COVID-19, you're beating a list of symptoms, okay? So the reality is, let's go after the virus. Let's expose what the virus is. Let's get some information out there that is valid, that doesn't violate the HIPAA thing, that you look at it and you say, well, okay, what's the reality here?
All right. Ed, could you do me a favor here? Because you're a much better driller downer than I am, and I'm sorry to place a burden on you. You talked about how there was that overnight, all of a sudden, active infections went away by more than 50, I think is what you had mentioned here, over one day at the end of the month. You know, that kind of thing.
I'm just reading. All I'm doing, Bill, is analyzing the daily update.
No, I get that. What I understand that's what you're doing. You're looking at the same information we all can if we go to the various sites. Right. Is there any way you could make some headway and get back to us if there's, you know, what the explanation for that could be? I'd just appreciate it if you could, as a favor, if at all possible, if you get back to me at some point. Okay.
The one possible explanation that I could come up with immediately, Bill, is that, okay, there's a certain amount of days that they consider infection active.
That could be.
So did it fall off because of the numbers, and did it fall off because of this? But my total question is when they say, oh, there's a reported death, now there's this. Now, no one is questioning the absolutes of that. And no one is questioning, okay, is it SARS-CoV-2? Because we have to remember the entire emergency was based upon that virus leaving China and coming to our shores. Now, we have deaths, we have whatever, but statistically, the CDC keeps files. You can look them up. Everybody out there can look them up. I think it averages 8 deaths per 100,000 from viral infections. Okay? Now, you look at that and you start putting it together. Well, we have 4 million people in the state of Oregon. So on a yearly average, we're going to lose that many people. And it's very simple when you start adding it up. Now you look at it now, okay, now magically we now tag everything COVID-19 and fear. You got to fear COVID-19. Well, I have seasonal allergies. I have them all the time.
You have some of the COVID-19 symptoms right now.
That's exactly right.
Isn't that funny? You think about it. Is it any wonder people are looking at everybody? You sneeze in a grocery store, they're looking at you. Oh my goodness, it's instant death person, you know, next to me.
You look at it like yesterday's show. What did you talk about? Rainey's Market. OSHA comes in and does all of this, you know, nightmare thing. All of these things they're doing, trying to bring down the administrative state on people, punishing them for ignoring, you know, or doing this or doing that. For what? Okay, the causative agent is what's required by law. That's reality.
We shouldn't really be looking at the symptoms. I would agree with you on that. And the moment they ended up calling it COVID-19, I think this is when the distortion and the manipulation of the agenda began. Ed, I've got to run, but stay in touch. And if you have any, if you're able to find out what happened with those the immediately vanishing 50 infections or active infections, I'd love to find out more. Okay, appreciate your take on it as always.
All right, Bill. You have a good one.
All right. And community activist and researcher, friend of the show, Mr. X, Ed, it is 7:35.
Jesse Keller here. I'm the new general manager at American Lumber. Please stop in and say hi and shop our spacious yard. There's plenty of parking and room to maneuver, so we'll get you in and out fast. American Lumber in White City on Avenue G.
Hey, Southern Oregon, have you heard about the brother of Picker's Paradise? It's Picker's Pawn, now open and located in White City next to the grocery outlet. Bring your unwanted items to Picker's Pawn. They'll pay you way more for your items, and you'll be happy you chose Picker's Pawn Shop first. Need a loan? Picker's Pawn can help you with that, too. Picker's Pawn official grand opening is August 1st. Check out their Facebook page for information, and be sure to visit Picker's Pawn, now open in White City next to the grocery outlet.
A business that puts people first? That's Ford Proud. Ford does that, and so does Butler Ford, for over four decades. Hi, I'm Joel Nickerson, sales manager at Butler Ford. And if you're looking for the best of the best in savings, here's three great options. All remaining 2019 F-150s for 0% APR for 84 months. Or 2020 Explorers, Edges, Escapes, Expeditions, Transits, Fusions, or EcoSports right now with 0% financing for 72 months. And the 2020 EcoSport SUV has $4,000 off MSRP. Great for a summer getaway to the coast for just $16,975. So when you're ready, visit us online at butlerford.com or give us a call at 541-482-2521. All distancing practices are in place, or if you prefer, we'll bring the vehicle to you. Butler Ford, exit 19, Ashland.
19 F-150 stock number 57068. 20 EcoSport number 57400. $365 Butler discount, $3,750 Ford retail customer cash. On approved credit, finance offer not available with other public, private, or direct offers. Not all will qualify. See dealer for details. Offer ends 8-3-20.
I'm Blake McHugh with your NBC 5 News update. Today marks 6 months since the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus outbreak a public health emergency of international concern. According to Johns Hopkins University, the United States has now passed 150,000 confirmed deaths from the virus. The U.S. has yet to flatten the coronavirus curve. President Trump is calling on governors to reopen their states, but his coronavirus task force is warning that 21 states might need stronger restrictions. Well, one of the latest deaths comes from Jackson County, the very first death the county has seen. Jackson County Public Health tells us he was a 65-year-old man who had underlying health conditions. He tested positive on June 29th and was transported to Portland for treatment and passed away over the weekend. Dr. Jim Shames says considering Jackson County has 325 cases, it has beaten the odds in terms of mortality rates. The Josephine County and the Oregon Department of Forestry are getting reimbursed for the Garner Complex fire that burned in 2018. In total, 300,000 acres were burned. Senators Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley made the announcement on Tuesday. ODF will be getting $14.8 million from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, otherwise known as FEMA. And according to the Daily Courier, the Josephine County will be receiving $29,000. That's a look at your morning headlines. I'm Blakely McHugh.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros. Hi, everyone. Carolyn from Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros here to tell you about our great products and services. We are your full-service repair shop, including services from engines, diagnostics and tune-ups to oil changes. Come in and let our master ASE certified technicians take care of you. We also carry national brand name tires like Michelin, BF Goodrich, General, Continental, and Hercules tires, just to name a few. Tires that give you exceptional performance, handling, and year-round traction. Come see us at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros on Main in Phoenix.
The following preview has been rated immature for all audiences except roof maintenance technicians and small children. In the not-too-distant future, in a world where leafy debris and flotsam collects in unsuspecting homeowners' gutters, causing what could be a catastrophic fire, with just one seemingly harmless airborne ember, two ordinary men.
He's talking about us.
Embark on an epic journey to vanquish that which causes clogged drains and fire hazards. Heroes will rise. Moss, twigs, and leafy debris will fall.
This is awesome.
This summer, call the Roof Rescue Team at Professional Roof Maintenance and witness the sheer...
What do you think?
So it's like we're superhero firefighters except without the supernatural powers, form-fitting costumes, and inherent danger?
Exactly.
Can we drive big, shiny red trucks?
Maybe in the sequel.
Professional Roof Maintenance, a division of Fontana Roofing. Visit ProfessionalRoofMaintenance.net.
Hi, I'm Paul Strandberg of Valley View Nursery, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
99.3 KCMD, FM 106.7 KMED. And this is the Bill Myers Show.
It's 20 before 8. Commissioner Rick Dyer, Jackson County, joins us. Commissioner, it's great to have you back on. And
thank you.
And by the way, you know, you had expressed in a text message, and I addressed this last hour, that I made some disparaging remarks about you. And if I had made things more personal than perhaps I should have, I do apologize for that. But I was very emphatic on my opinion about the vote on that that letter of the other week. So wanted to give you a chance to respond to that if you could, and just give us your take on it for folks this morning, okay?
Okay, well, first of all, Bill, I appreciate your passion, and I know everybody is very passionate and should be about this, so I understand when things do get taken to a level that maybe is beyond what we normally would. So
sure.
I'm not holding anything like that against you, and I hope for the same grace from others. But as far as this letter goes, I don't disagree with anything that the letter was saying. I think that there are good points to be made, but here's the problem. The problem is, as you know, the Supreme Court has ruled on 401-165, basically, and the other statutes that allow emergency declarations, and they basically expressed that the governor has broad authority and very wide discretion, and that goes for things as far as her discretion and what she feels is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
They gave her extremely broad powers, and I think that's dangerous, but that's the situation that we live in. So just to answer a few of the things that you thought might happen with this letter, and I'm going to have to disagree with them.
Okay.
You said that she would probably respond to, you know, why she feels that the geographic area is as small as necessary. I don't think there's any chance she would respond. She doesn't respond to most of our letters, and certainly
I don't think she's going to respond to one she's not legally compelled to. That potentially puts her in some sort of legal exposure. Her lawyers would certainly not allow her to do that. Hmm. And especially when, like I say, the Oregon Supreme Court gave her pretty wide latitude on discretion on what is necessary. So she was already given that authority. I don't think she needs to. Well, she should explain it. She should be a lot more communicative with us, but she's not, and I don't think there's any chance she would have responded to that.
So, Commissioner, do you think, where is the check? Because Clause 5 says she must do this, and it sounds like, in essence, that this is a control on it. Otherwise, the legislature would not have placed that in there. She certainly does have broad authority, but does she actually have broad authority to define all the terms of the agreement, so to speak, in the law?
Well, possibly not. But like I said, the Supreme Court came out with a pretty strong ruling saying she did. And again, just a letter asking her to explain is not going to compel her to do that. If there was another judicial challenge, which I think, again, because the previous case has what is considered binding precedent and subject to stare decisis, which means the case has been decided.
But do remember, though, that what the churches did, the churches didn't sue the governor or challenge the governor on Clause 5 or, you know, what we're talking about, because I think you'd agree, Jackson County and Southern Oregon counties in general have responded quite effectively to this. Would you agree with me on that?
I absolutely agree with that, Bill.
Okay.
I agree with you that there are restraints and there are things that do limit the power. But like I say, that was a 42-page decision. I don't know if you read that Supreme Court.
I did.
Supreme Court decision.
I did. Yeah.
It's long and boring, but there's a lot of information, and I believe they made it intentionally broad to answer any future questions like this. And again, I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just saying that is the reality that we're in. And I don't think that letter would have elicited any sort of response from the governor. I mean, she doesn't respond to us in most of our correspondences, and especially not one that she's not compelled to and would possibly, you know, create some legal exposure. That's where I stood.
Well, so in some respects, though, what you're saying is that it wouldn't have had any effect, but would it have actually hurt? I don't know how it could have hurt.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, and I know a lot of people have said that. And hurting, that's a term that can be interpreted a lot of different ways. I don't think it's going to hurt to send it, but I don't like to also dilute our message. We do try to stay focused. I think there may have been, just like a lot of our letters, I don't even know if they're read. But I do think that we need to stay focused. And, you know, I'm not saying that this letter had any credibility issues, but to argue a point that, again, I know specifically it may not have been mentioned, but it did mention broad powers to do it as necessary. I think that it kind of argues against the Supreme Court decision that was just put out.
Boy, I completely disagreed with you on that. I thought it essentially said that she has the power, and I don't remember there any challenge to the Supreme Court decision whatsoever, Commissioner, but it was about that you also have to follow the entirety of it, and that Clause 5 that is the one that we keep kind of pointing at and picking the scab on seems to be a limitation on her broad authority. And I think it's something that Jackson County and other counties should have or could have at least raised the question. Could you, tell us why rather than accepting the harms, because her orders are causing great harm here. Like I had mentioned, the Rainy Market controversy and citizen turning after citizen and they're hurting. And I'm hoping and praying that the counties will work towards interposing, interpositioning the county between the excesses of Governor Brown's authority and we the people. And I'm wondering if you're going to at least work on that.
Absolutely. And again, I'm not disputing anything you say that there are limitations. I'm just saying that I can guarantee you, nearly 100% that she would not have responded to this because she wouldn't have been compelled to. It would have created, again, potential legal exposure, and there's no way unless compelled, she would have said, well, here's my justification. Now, as far as, you know, what we need to do to interpose and what we need to do to advocate and represent Jackson County, you know, we have been looking at every angle we can. And I know, you know, the problem is, you know, things look pretty futile when we undertake what you know, say is thin gruel. I'm not going to disagree.
Yeah, but we don't have a duty to die, okay? We do not have a duty to die on her cross of COVID, right?
Absolutely. And right now, the only bodies that can end the current state of emergency are the governor and the legislature. And right now, I think it's incumbent on our legislators to do just that, to say, we're past the point of crisis now. We're in management mode. Management mode can easily be handled in a much more representative and democratic process. And they have the authority and power and duty, in my opinion, to take back that authority and to use it and to say, yeah, there isn't representation from Southern Oregon. There is a lot of harm being created that isn't necessary. And I'm going to tell you, that's something I fought all along. The very first day, well, the night before Kate Brown announced her initial restrictions back in March, we had a conference call, one of the last conference calls she actually participated in. Well, there may be a couple more, but one of the last. And I said very clearly to her, directly to her, I said, these restrictions defy common sense. You are applying a one-size-fits-all remedy to a state that has vastly different regions, that have vastly different populations, vastly different risk factors, and that's not the way policy is made. Good policy is made using all of the information when it differs in different regions and making policy for that particular set of data and information that you have. I told her that very clearly. I have been representing for Southern Oregon not to be put into these, you know, these big categories that Multnomah and Washington County and other counties that do have bigger issues are in. I've been doing that from the beginning.
Okay, and I'll agree with you, but what I would add is that perhaps it is time for the county to actually address it. Instead of going even with the letter last week, perhaps there actually should be a legal demand for the justification given what is going on. Could you support that?
As far as actually filing a suit to compel that?
Sure.
Well, you know, I guess if I thought that was going to do something, I would need to look into, again, a lot more clearly. Like I say, that this current or the previous Supreme Court decision does carry some legal binding precedent with it.
Okay.
I honestly don't believe that particular challenge would go far. And, you know, here's what would probably, even if she was compelled to answer it, she could say, it is my discretion, my opinion, that the entire state is the smallest geographic area necessary to address this.
But you see, I would say that a lawsuit could be able to say, no, not really, because Jackson is not Multnomah. But all right, so we're going to agree to disagree on this one. Commissioner, stay in touch, okay? And I'm just a little short on time. I wish I had a little more time to throw at you at the moment, but I think you've pretty much done a good job of explaining your side of that, okay?
And I just want to say something real quick before I go. I think, Bill, you know, you and I and the commissioners and most people are on the same page on what we want. We have different strategies sometimes, and I don't think we need to be divided on this. I think we need to really concert our efforts and say, okay, you know, let's devise a strategy that we all can agree on. Instead of saying, you know, what you did completely abdicated your authority. And again, I know emotions, passion is at play. I get it, but I do think that's the best way going forward.
All right, Commissioner, good to have you on, and thanks for checking in, okay?
All right, thank you.
Commissioner Rick Dyer, Jackson County, 752. State Senator Herman Bertschiger is here someplace. I don't know if this is Herman. Is this Herman?
Yep, that's Herman.
Herman! Good to have you back, because this is dovetailing right from Commissioner Dyer's conversation, and we were even talking about the Rainey's situation, and you have some news this morning, and I wanted to bring you on about that.
Well, I checked in with the head of OSHA yesterday. What happened to Rainey's? They had some multiple complaints. filed at OSHA, and Rainey's responded to it. OSHA did a drive-by. They seen that their employees were now wearing masks, and so that case will be closed. And talking to the folks out at Rainey's, what their biggest problem is a lot of their customers just refuse to wear masks in the store.
Are they responsible under OSHA rules if customers refuse?
Well, there you go, you know. And I just said, do the best you can. And, you know, there's no reason to get in a big conflict with your customers. So I think that has been resolved. You know, this is absolute madness, given this governor this kind of executive authority for this duration of time. It really is, Bill. It's just, it is. It's just madness. It turns into a dictatorship.
Now, you know, Commissioner Dyer was talking about the fact that he sees that the real check on the governor's power, he believes, is going to be through the legislature. And I know the Republicans would be willing to check it. Are there any Democrats that are actually seeing common sense, or do they want the whole place to burn down, too?
They're so scared, they're not going to do anything.
Damn.
They are. The Democrats are petrified. Their little Antifa machine there, which I'll probably get a lot of criticism for saying that, but they can't no longer have any control over it. And so they have created a monster that is on the loose. So the Democrats will, they can't go left enough for these groups. I mean, look what they're asking for. They want free tuition. They want a monthly paycheck. They just want everything for free, and there is no way that the Democrat Party can do that. They can't do it, and they realize that now, Bill. Now,
you honestly think that the Democrat heads within the legislature, they do realize they can't control the Antifa army?
That's right. And, you know, the governor just flat misled people in her statement that the feds are leaving Portland.
What's the real truth on that?
Well, the president just tweeted it this morning and said, hey, we're not leaving until Portland can demonstrate that they can stop the riots and that the federal building is safe.
So essentially, Governor Brown talking about that the feds are leaving, was this for political effect more so than reflecting reality on the ground in Antifaville, downtown Portland?
Right. And, you know, our state police is not a very big organization. And you have to remember, when she directs the state police to take over that down there, they don't go hire some more state police. They take officers from all over the state, from our community and other rural communities. So now we're lacking law enforcement.
Are you saying that Josephine County, which works hand in hand with the county sheriffs there, and Jackson County, could find themselves shorthanded because of Kate Brown's
Absolutely.
Order? Really?
They got to come from somewhere. And so Superintendent Hampton will have to pull them from somewhere. And then they'll be getting overtime. The cost to the state, and we'll have to put them up in hotels, the cost of the state and the communities around Oregon is very significant. Nobody ever talks about that.
All right. And Senator Baranchyk, I'll give you one more bite there. You were talking about the donations to Black Lives Matter. I don't have a lot of time to go into that. You want to give us a thumbnail of what's happening here?
Yeah, I sent you a talking paper on that, and there's one on my Facebook page, too. It's amazing. When you go to the Black Lives Matter website and you click on donate, it redirects you to Act Blue. Act Blue is the Democrat election machine, national election machine. So all the donations to Black Lives Matter goes to Act Blue. They have raised in this cycle $1.8 billion.
That's real money. That is real money in anyone's.
That's real money.
That is a hell of a war chest.
And coming out of Oregon, $26 million coming out of Oregon. So you want to know why those nobody's done anything about the riots in Portland for 60 days?
There it is. Money.
Connect the dots.
All right. All right. Senator Baranchyk, thanks for the update. And just a quick circle around once again. So.
Sure.
OSHA is going to kind of let some of the boot off of Rainey's, all right? So they're going to close that case. All right, as far as the other businesses in Southern Oregon, is OSHA going after these businesses if they can't control their customers to the extent that OSHA would like?
It is complaint-driven. Okay? So it's complaint-driven. In other words, they're not going out there and running around and going in business. It's complaint-driven. So if somebody they get a few complaints, then they're going to go investigate.
All right. Thanks for letting us know, but I appreciate knowing that Rainey's is hopefully not going to go down in flames on this, okay? Thanks so much.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's crazy. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Senator. 757.
Bi-Mart's Summer of Savings continues with specials on great gear for our members who love to get outdoors. Keep your food icy cold with an Igloo 100-quart cooler. Get a great night's sleep with a Coleman Cozy Foot sleeping bag and a StanSport military cot. And snag the catch of a lifetime with a Shakespeare Ugly Stick fishing rod. Get these deals and more by visiting bimart.com and looking for our digital flyers. It's a summer of savings going on now through August 11th at your neighborhood Bi-Mart store.
And now for some good news. Airport Chevrolet is making deals you don't want to miss during our huge Summer of Savings event. Get your brand new Chevy Spark for just $11,999. The popular Chevy Spark comes with 10 airbags, room for 4, Wi-Fi, and backup mirror. Plus, you'll receive our premium maintenance package. Why would anyone buy a used car when you can buy a brand new car with great fuel mileage and warranty for under $12,000? That's now through August 3rd, only at Airport Chevrolet. Get your new Chevy Spark before they sell out during our huge Summer of Savings event. Airport. The only name you need to know on Biddle Road, Medford. On the web at airportchevy.com.
2020 manual Spark, 6 in stock. MSRP $14,395 less dealer discount $23.96. Subject to prior sale. Does not include license, title, registration, electronic processing fee, and Oregon privilege tax on approved credit. Chevrolet. Find new roads.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I made the switch to Dish from No Wires Now. Wish I'd done it years ago. The channel selection is outstanding. Linda and I have everything we could possibly want to watch, live, recorded, and on demand. And the Hopper DVR that you get with Dish from No Wires Now makes it easy to find your favorite shows with a voice-activated remote control. And No Wires Now is local. Stop by their showroom on Biddle Road in Medford. Call them at 680-5875 or log on nowiresdish.com. That's nowiresdish.com.
The Oregon Wine Experience Founders Barrel Auction has gone digital. Indulge in the brilliance, experience the elegance, taste the future. Bid on exclusive wine made special for this online auction, all to benefit kids' health and our community. Don't miss the opportunity to add these one-of-a-kind wines to your collection. For more information on how to bid, visit theoregonwineexperience.com. The Oregon Wine Experience, the very best of Oregon. This advertisement presented by Pacific Power.
Never miss the Bill Meyer Show. Download recent podcasts at BillMeyerShow.com or KMED.com. Brought to you by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, driven by Linex on Airway Drive off Vilas.
You know, I got a hold of Senator Bereshiger again, wanted to bring him on because Ed, Mr. X, you had a question for him, and I thought it was pretty germane to all this conversation this hour about the governor's emergency declarations. How you doing, Ed and Senator Bereshiger? Ed, what did you want to ask the senator?
Well, you know, acknowledging that the senator is a big part of the law writing system, I wanted his interpretation of 401165 when the item number 5 says that the proclamation shall contain the size of the emergency, the affected area of the emergency, and the second part of it, which says such area shall be no larger than necessary as to effectively respond. I would like to know, would the legislative intent be literally a control on the ability of the governor to harm the citizens?
So, Ed, you know, to answer your question, it's very frustrating. I think you're absolutely right. I think she's abused that. The problem is you have to be challenged. And Senator Boquist and I have been trying to find somebody to challenge her in the court of law. That takes money. That takes somebody to do it. But given the fact that the Democrat Party controls every statewide elective official except for the Secretary of State, which was appointed by this governor, that's interesting, and by also they control the House, they control the Senate with a supermajority, and the governor has appointed most of these judges, the likelihood to get a favorable ruling in this state is unlikely. That's what I'm being told by legal.
Would it necessarily have to go to a ruling? Because as a function of the law, you know, the Supreme Court has already ruled. They basically said in a 42-page decision, which I've read pretty extensively, but the basics of it are that she had the authority under that law. Well, that is kind of like a double-edged sword. That would mean that, you know, she has the authority under that law, but she also has to obey that law. So what I'm saying is, without a court battle, if you can show effective response, it should be just a function of that law.
That who's going to make the governor do that?
That's what I'm saying is that I don't know if it would have to be made, because it's literally, this law was written, what was it, in the 60s? I think 401165.
Well, they do this all the time. They change rules. They break rules all the time. It's very common now that they've got the supermajority that they break. We see them break rules, our Senate rules. They stretch them. You know, when we did the walkout, they tried to fine us. They tried to stretch that. They tried to kick us out of the Senate. They tried to stretch that. You know, to do that to us, they stretch things like you've never.
Yeah, we get that. We get that, though. So legal in the state doesn't think it's that there would be that no one can read the law, that there's no judge that's actually willing to read the law. And
yeah, and rule in our favor. And that's what the legal minds that we have asked to challenge her. And we've asked some pretty good legal minds. And they said, look, the deck is stacked against us. And so she knows that. And unless we get a ruling from a judge, she's going to keep doing that. And there's nothing, the legislature isn't going to touch that.
So in essence, now, Ed, I'd ask both of you, does this mean then that the counties would have to be essentially in rebellion to get anything done rather than waiting for the court, looking to the courts?
What'd
you say, Ed? I only have about a minute here, so we'll have to cut you both loose here quickly.
Go ahead, Senator.
Well, you know, when we, on the cap and trade bill, we had 32 counties sign resolutions against that bill, and the Democrats said, we don't care. They don't care.
So, all right.
I'm as frustrated as you are, Ed, but until we get a court ruling, we're stuck.
Well, the way that I would respond to what you just said is that was a bill that was trying to be passed. This is a law that's been passed and in effect. I mean, it's there, etched in stone, how to say. The Supreme Court just said she had authorities under that law, so she chose that law, but that also means she has to obey the law. I don't think myself that it requires a court challenge. I think it takes
who's going to police her? You got to answer my question, Ed.
I'm not saying that it would be, you know, accepted by her, but she gave a hint of her acceptance of it, because after that was discussed in a public meeting in Jackson County and it was shown that it was almost accepted at that point, she responded the next day by going on TV by saying, we are looking at working with individual counties.
Hmm.
And then the next time after it was not signed on to, she came back with more restrictions. But I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, it becomes a pretty clear thing is that it's a function of that law. The Supreme Court has already made that decision. Well, it wouldn't be too far of a stretch to say, okay, she may have to. She may understand that she has to. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Hey, okay, Ed, I appreciate the call. I got to run here, gentlemen. It was great talk here, but we're loggerheads. We're all looking for this, looking for the magic, looking for the magic bean.
We're just talking past ourselves, Bill. I think we all agree on the premise. My question is, who are we going to get then for it? How do we hold the governor's feet to the fire? That's the question that needs to be answered.
All right. Senator, thanks for entertaining the question. Really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay.